Welcome to the Backup CD. Every week we talk about a random topic. Topics are as important as the U.S. economic tax policy and as trivial and fun as personal Marvel Cinematic Universe movie rankings. We're a group of students who have lots of different interests, and we wanted to share our conversations with you. You may not always be interested in what we're talking about, but hey, just like that backup CD you have in the back of your car in case your phone dies, we're something to listen to. Let's get started. All right, everybody, welcome to episode 2 of the Backup CD. This is our second episode. Last week we talked about the greatest battles in history, and this week we are talking about impeachment. This is a hot topic issue right now, just with all the talk about Donald Trump possibly being impeached and the House conducting hearings right now. I'm one of your hosts, Clint Bisbee, here at Utah State. And Carter, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Carter, also a student at Utah State. Am I a host, a co-host?
Yeah, you're a host. You're a host.
I just didn't want to throw out the title if it wasn't correct. I'm really not that interesting, so we'll pass it on to Dylan.
Dylan.
Yes, I am Dylan, and I think that says everything you need to know about me. So
amen. Swine flu connoisseur.
This week it's Ebola. I love Ebola.
Oh my gosh. All right.
Real side note. Dr. Lyons in our class the other day told us that if we wanted a disease, pneumonia was the disease to get because you can cure it pretty easily. Although it can kill people, it has killed people in Cache Valley recently.
I've had pneumonia before.
Really?
It was not a pleasant experience.
Yeah, I started
hallucinating.
More or less pleasant than one of the three times you've been shot at?
Less pleasant.
Okay.
I would say that.
Being shot at by guns.
Interesting analysis there.
Well, when you get shot at, it honestly only lasts like maybe a minute. Like pneumonia, that lasted 3 weeks of my life.
See, but in his words, you go to the hospital, you get pumped with antibiotics, and then in 3 days you're back skiing on Beaver Mountain or whatever.
Okay, well, we aren't all Dr. Michael freaking Ryan, so
yeah.
All right.
Impeachment,
yeah. So we're going to start today talking a little bit about the history of impeachment, kind of the origins of it in the Constitutional Convention in 1787. Then we're going to talk about the different times that presidents have either been impeached or, in Richard Nixon's case, pretty much impeached.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk about Donald Trump's current proceedings against Donald Trump. What do you guys want to say about the Constitutional Convention?
Well, I thought it was interesting in kind of the research I did. My research was not that in depth. I just read one article from House.gov, which I feel like is good, has some reliability since they're the ones that, begin the impeachment.
Yeah, they're
process.
The ones in charge of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so maybe for reference, we should read what the Constitution says.
Look at that. From quote, this is on their little page here, the Constitution, Article 2, Section 4. It says, "The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors."
Yeah, so basically the procedure here is it two-thirds of the House?
No, it's just a majority.
The simple majority of the House has to approve articles for impeachment, which simply says that we want to have a trial held against this public officer. It's not just the president, like that said.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to the Senate where it's tried. An interesting fact, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court oversees, because usually the vice president does, but he has a vested interest in seeing the president removed, as
right. That
would ascend him to power. So Chief Justice of the Supreme Court oversees the proceedings,
mm-hmm.
and then if two-thirds of the Senate, acting as a jury essentially, votes to convict, the president or public officer is removed from office.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so kind of an interesting thing, I guess, going off of this whole thing of impeachment. So we have the president, vice president, and all civil officers. So I guess throughout history, let me pull up the numbers real quick. So there's been 19 cases of impeachment by the House. President Andrew Johnson, Secretary of War William W. Belknap in 1876, Senator William Blount in 1797, President Bill Clinton in 1998, and 15 federal judges.
Yeah.
So the majority of impeachments that have happened throughout U.S. history have been
judges
against federal judges. And it's interesting the distinction between that kind of civil servants versus everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we'll get in that later. But ultimately, only 8 impeachments have led to Senate convictions, and all of those were federal judges. So,
so no executive officers.
Yeah, no executive officers.
Or legislative officer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought, did you say senator?
Yeah, yeah. So
they weren't removed from
they
office.
Weren't
they
were removed from
impeached.
Office. They were just impeached.
Yeah.
That was clear back when. Anyways, yeah, no, but so I forgot what I was about to say. Anyone else want to say
I'll say that.
No, Carter.
Okay, all right. Well, one of the things that I found interesting were just like the origins of impeachment, like outside of the United States. So when the like framers were, you know, establishing the Constitution and what would be in it, they got the idea of impeachment from like British constitutional history,
mm-hmm.
which I found interesting just because, you know, that was the country we just gained independence from and didn't really want to be very much like. But, like, the, I guess their focus was being able to have some, like, checks and balance type power between legislative and executive. But the impeachment what came from Great Britain and was a way for Parliament to remove any of the king's, like, ministers or whatever they called them, but not the king himself.
That'd be pretty metal.
That would be pretty metal.
Although they did impeach the king multiple times when they killed him.
I guess so, yeah. But the way that like the impeachment process is set up is very similar to how it was then. You know, in British Parliament, there's the House of Commons and the House of Lords, which is similar to like the House of Representatives and the Senate. And the House of Commons is where the impeachment process happened, but only the House of Lords could remove someone from office.
Yeah, no. I think that's important to recognize that, you know, we have this British common law system, and that's where we got this, that's where we got the idea from, and that's where we actually got the wording of impeachment for the conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And especially with that high crimes and misdemeanors, I think that's really important, especially as we go forward and consider the impeachment of Donald Trump and how that might proceed.
Mm-hmm.
Because treason, pretty laid out. Like, you're using your office to go against the United States, to benefit another country.
While harming the U.S.
Bribery, pretty self-explanatory, too. That's one of the kind of charges that have been brought up against President Trump at this point.
Especially in the last few days.
Yeah, but basically bribing someone. And then the high crimes and misdemeanors, we really have to look back to the original interpretation within British common law to
understand what that
means.
Yeah,
to say
what
means.
Want, yeah.
So,
all right, so yeah, let's talk about the first ever impeachment in American history, which was Andrew Johnson.
Of a president.
Of a president.
Of a president, yes, sorry, I should clarify.
First impeachment was of a federal judge, and it's something Livingston, and he was drunk all the time.
Ooh,
so
I can figure it out, I have it right here.
Look at Carter.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Actually, well, I don't know if this is right, but right here it says William Blount.
Oh, well, William Blount was the senator.
What counts?
I thought it was a judge. Maybe I'm wrong. But yes, the first
president to be impeached is Andrew Johnson. Hold on, let me pull up my Wikipedia here.
Oh, I got you.
That's
right
all
here.
We got.
Hold
That's all.
Impeached February 24th, 1868.
1868. So what's happening?
On charges of violating the Tenure of Office Act by removing Secretary of War Edwin Stanton from office.
Yeah, so basically what happens here, this is right after the Civil War, it's the beginning of the Reconstruction era, and you have this group of Republicans in both the House and Senate called Radical Republicans. They were the staunchest of abolitionists during the Civil War, and then after they were the staunchest of we need to punish the South. And they disliked Lincoln for his lenient tendencies towards more kind and compassionate look towards the South and rebuilding it. Unfortunately, Abraham Lincoln is assassinated in April of 1865, so what he would have done, we never really know. But Andrew Johnson secedes him. Succeeds him. Andrew Johnson had been a senator from Tennessee, which is interesting because Tennessee had actually seceded from the Union, and he was still serving as a senator from that state. He gets elected vice president.
There's too many S words right
yeah.
there. All
he gets elected vice president in 1864 in the National Union Party, which is just kind of this weird thrown together party of war Democrats who supported the war wanted to see the South beaten, and Republicans, less radical Republicans. He gets elected, and then in April of 1865, only after a few months of being the vice president, is sworn in as the 17th president of the United States. The radicals figured that they could control Johnson to a great degree. They figured he had no right to be in the office, so they should just listen to him, especially radicals including Edwin Stanton. So this goes on and on. There's a back and forth. And eventually, Congress passes the Tenure in Office Act. The Tenure in Office Act, according to Wikipedia, again, this is where we gain much of our knowledge, but according to Wikipedia, the Tenure in Office Act required that before a president removed any cabinet-level position, he had to consult Congress before doing so. Both houses pass this bill. Johnson vetoes it. The House and Senate override his veto. And during this time, he removes Edwin Stanton from office, who was a radical. He was the Secretary of War. Some even peg that Edwin Stanton may have been partially behind the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. That's a whole other episode we could dive into, a conspiracy theory episode. So Edwin Stanton's removed from office, and he appoints Ulysses S. Grant as the ad interim Secretary of War. The House loses its mind, files articles of impeachment, and the Senate tries him. He wasn't removed, obviously.
He was acquitted by one vote.
He was acquitted by one vote. So that was our first case of impeachment. And if you notice here, it had nothing to do really with Johnson violating the law. I mean, obviously he did, but the real reason was that radical Republicans hated Johnson and wanted to control and get rid of him.
Well, and I think it's an interesting point I guess if you study the impeachment and the few cases that we have about impeachment, it doesn't necessarily have to deal specifically with a civil officer or an executive officer violating criminal law.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to this debate of, well, what does high crimes and misdemeanors mean? And it could just be that they are awful and that you don't like them very much. And technically, that is within the House's discretion.
Well, and I think that was something that the founders had in mind when they gave Congress the ability to impeach people.
Well,
not necessarily like you just don't like them.
Yeah.
Leadership style, whatever it may be.
Well, one of my favorite stories is I don't know the historical accuracy of it, but Benjamin Franklin basically advocated for impeachment based on whether or not the people were annoyed by a president.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Just like if they were an annoying person, you can impeach them.
Well, and I think that may have been why there was kind of a bit of conflict on how to go about impeachment in the Constitutional Convention, because some of them were like, well, if people don't like them, then they can just not vote for them in 4 years, and
yeah.
They'll have their impeachment then. So, yeah.
Well, that's
my
personal mindset is, well, just vote them out.
Vote them out, yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, no, Clinton.
I was just going to say, like, I think there is a serious question here about, you know, what we've kind of entered a hint around, but what is high crimes and misdemeanors? I mean, obviously, President Johnson violated the law that had been established. If he wanted to challenge it, he could have gone through more legal routes of bringing it to the Supreme Court. But the issue here is, I think this will come up again and again and again, was the House within its rights to impeach Andrew Johnson?
Mm-hmm.
And to an extent, I think, like, turning to the strict letter of the law, he broke the law. So he should be there. There was grounds for impeachment, but the real reason they used the breaking of the law as a reason to go after Johnson. They didn't. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, and I would push back on that a little bit, because impeachment isn't for criminal prosecution. It's for the removal of an officer, specifically when they use that office to violate. Or
constitutional.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily they're committing a crime. It's, well, and generally they are. But the thing is, so you'll take, for example, Nixon. One of the articles of impeachment filed against Nixon during 1974 was tax evasion. And basically, it's the United States versus Nixon. And basically, I don't remember how it was decided, but it's basically, this is a private matter. But this is Nixon as a private citizen violating the law. This is not Nixon as the president
violating
the law.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is important, is it has to be the individual as a civil or executive officer is violating the law.
Not the individual of
yeah.
Andrew Johnson, of Richard Nixon, of Donald Trump violating the law. It's the president of the United States as, well, Donald Trump as the president of the United States, or Richard Nixon as the president of the United States violating the law.
Yeah.
Well, also, if you're not done that.
Yeah, yeah, no, go for it.
I'm trying to figure out how I want to start this. So this semester, I went to these little study things with Rob Bishop, and he kind of talked to us about, like, procedure in the House and stuff. But he also talked to us about, like, these, like, significant periods of, like, or just, like, how over time the Congress and the president have interacted.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about, like, these interesting periods where you have, like, these presidents that kind of, like, push the limits of, like, executive power, and then these times where the Congress is trying to, like, rein that back in and be like, well, we want these things back. And he brought up the impeachment of Andrew Johnson as kind of, like, this thing, this one of these examples, because, like, even though Abraham Lincoln is, like, one of my heroes, I think, like,
He expanded the
executive power.
For sure.
And the Congress didn't like that, and you have Andrew Johnson come in and kind of do a similar thing where he, you know, whatever he did, he made the Secretary of War resign, and they were like, oh, crap, we can't let the president do that. And so they try to impeach him as, like, a check on the executive power from the legislative. And then with, like, Richard Nixon, you have, like, these long periods of time after, like, FDR, where, like, the president and, like, the War Powers Act and things like that, where they were kind of expanding executive power. And then, obviously, Nixon did something that was worthy of impeachment, and there was that. But
we can discuss
kind of these times.
Yeah.
These times where the House wants to kind of rein in the executive, or the Congress wants to rein in the executive. And
for sure. Well, and, like, you know, evidence of this is, think of great presidents. You know, we obviously always think of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and then usually we skip the middle ones because they're kind of weak, not ineffectual. Usually we get to Andrew Jackson,
mm-hmm.
then we get Abraham Lincoln. Between Abraham Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt, 16 to 26, number 16 to 26, who can you think of as a great president? You can't think of many, because quite often during this time period, the legislative power was so
mm-hmm.
immense and so total. Not weak by any means, presidents, not that they were weak men or that they didn't have strong leadership. It was just the legislature was where governing happened, not the executive.
Yeah.
And then you see that turn around again with a little bit of Teddy Roosevelt, a little bit of Woodrow Wilson, but to a great extent, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And so I agree that I think, especially in the case of Andrew Johnson, I don't know so much about the latter ones, but especially in the case of Andrew Johnson, it's this, we are the source of governing, right? We are the ultimate powerful authority, which is what the founders intended.
Well, and you might be able to say there's a similar feel with, like, President Trump.
Yeah.
And maybe even, like, with how people felt about President Obama, just
yeah.
trying to, like, push the limits of the executive power and Congress.
Well, and I think it's interesting that, you know, the radical Republicans were willing to swallow Lincoln expanding the executive power to a great extent, not only because it was wartime, but because even though they disagreed with Lincoln to a great extent, he was on their side. He was their guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get Andrew Johnson, who by all means, even though he's a national union guy, he's a Democrat.
Sure.
Andrew
yeah.
Johnson was a Democrat.
Yeah.
And they wanted to control the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, no, absolutely.
So let's move on to Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was never actually impeached. He resigned before that could ever happen. But let's dive a little bit into what led up to what could have been an impeachment and almost certainly would have been, up until now, the only time a president likely would have been removed from office. You have Richard Nixon during the 1972 campaign. He basically hired a group of burglars and criminals. I don't know if they're criminals, but one was ex-CIA.
Yeah.
They broke into the Watergate building, which was the Democratic headquarters, where the National Democratic headquarters were, tried to plant bugs. And as journalists and investigators started to dive deeper and deeper into this, they uncovered this whole network of basically spies and groups of individuals who were practicing some pretty
shady
stuff.
Yeah.
And it brought up a lot of stuff that the president was directly involved. And furthermore, brought up lots of different things. Dylan, do you want to expand on it? You probably know a little
bit. Ultimately, the articles that were brought up against Nixon were abuse of presidential power, the establishment of these networks to further political ambition and stuff. I think it's kind of a weird thing because at this point, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Nixon is in his second term.
Yes.
So he's not getting another term. He won a he won by a wide margin. Yeah.
72 was the second. Well, unless you count George Washington's unanimous elections. 72, Richard Nixon gets the second most amount of electoral votes ever, only to be beaten by Reagan in 84.
Yeah, but you have obstruction of justice. The president refused to cooperate with legitimate subpoenas that were issued by Congress, and you had contempt of Congress kind of playing into that. And then you had this larger question, and I think it's important to bring out, of the president's more personal behavior. So you had tax evasion that Nixon was guilty of. You kind of have Nixon as this shady character with his enemies list, where you have a whole bunch of actors and people that speak out against him. All these things were kind of brought up, but looking back historically, the big thing is the Watergate.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, happened before the election.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's true.
People just kind of blew it off. Like, it was not that big of
a
deal. They wrote it as just like a overzealous campaign volunteers or whatever they said.
Yeah, no. Well, and I mean, and just like historically, when you consider something that has changed the impeachment process, that were the Nixon impeachment came up with the Dessler. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but the Dessler precedent, which is where we get most of the modern rules for impeachment.
That's interesting.
So yeah, no, it was really interesting. It's several pages long, and it's just talking about like how the House is supposed to handle things, how they're supposed to classify and declassify certain things as they relate to national security. Because Nixon was the first, this is kind of a side note, but the first impeachment where the United States is as big as it is.
Right.
Everything else that happened before this in terms of impeachment, and including most of the judges, and especially with executive officers, the United States isn't a big-time player. We're just kind of doing our own thing on our own continent. But you have issues of national security coming in, especially when we look at the Trump, everything that's going on with the Trump impeachment inquiry right now. All of it has to do with national security and foreign interactions.
I think it's interesting you brought that up because does that change what impeachment becomes? I mean, Andrew Johnson, 1868, the United States is a small republic. By any means, it's a small nation. Even though it's large economically, it is not the world player that it is.
Mm-hmm.
50 years after the Civil War, 100 years after the Civil War, 150 years. And then you fast forward 100 years, 110 years, and you get to Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon is the leader of the largest economy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The political juggernaut, one of the world's superpowers, and I think that's interesting. What I'm going to jump in here and say this, and I think this applies especially as we move forward with Donald Trump. Richard Nixon, to a great degree, a lot of the things he did were nothing different than many of his opponents did. There's obvious evidence of in '64, Lyndon Johnson wiretapping his opponents. When Richard Nixon goes up, when he claims executive privilege over the Watergate tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Many times before, presidents had exercised executive privilege.
Sure.
But why is it different now? And here's the reason, is that you have a group of Democrats in the House, but also you have shifting cultural norms about what the president can get away with, right? I mean, in early 1960s, JFK had illicit affairs with many women.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hidden and kept under wraps because the media and the president had a relationship that covered that sort of thing up, right?
Yeah.
Not because they thought it was right, but because that was not the purview of the media. Then you have Vietnam, which fundamentally changes how journalism views its profession about what is permissible, what is not permissible. And so they dive in and they get Nixon, and a lot of America is really upset about this point about Vietnam, and then Watergate all of a sudden hits. And so I don't think necessarily Richard Nixon did all that much different than many presidents prior to him. But because of the change in cultural shifts, which again, this goes back to kind of with Andrew Johnson, it wasn't so much what Richard Nixon or Andrew Johnson did, it's about the change in cultural tides that pushed the impeachment rather than any specific action.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. No, but I think it's gonna, I, I think looking at Nixon's impeachment inquiry, I think that's going to be the most analogous.
Analogous to Donald
Trump. Because I imagine that Trump will claim executive privilege a lot like Nixon did. Moreover, I mean, moving on to our next impeachment case, we have William J. Clinton, good old William J. So 1998, you have this basically what the House nabs Clinton on is perjurious testimony to a federal grand jury and the obstruction of justice.
Right, and this all relates to the Monica Lewinsky case.
Yeah.
It says,
I did not
have an affair with that woman.
Did not have sexual relations with
that woman.
Yeah, sexual relations, that's the big one.
Interesting note, I was born on the same day that William Clinton, Jefferson Clinton said, he says, I, in fact, did have sexual with Miss Lewinsky, and so
what a day to be born.
What a day!
This is maybe another side note, but I listened to this podcast a while ago called Slow Burn. If you guys haven't heard of it, they talk. They go in a lot of depth in like the Richard Nixon impeachment and then Bill Clinton impeachment. And the claim that Bill Clinton made a lot was like on the definition of sexual relations. And I don't want to get too much into it, but basically he's like, I never really reciprocated any of the things, and so I wasn't lying, which is what in his mind and in the mind of his lawyers is what constitutes sexual relations.
That's an interesting argument.
Well,
so go ahead, Dylan.
I was just gonna say, so with this, you have a president, like it is all very much a personal affair. It is just his word that ultimately nabbed Clinton, and Clinton was acquitted by the Senate by both articles adopted by the House. But going back to this idea that, you know, if we want to look forward with Trump's impeachment inquiry, we should probably look more at Nixon because I
agree. But I will say this again, going back to the cultural shifts and the issues at hand of the day, it wasn't so much what Bill Clinton did, right? 1994, Republicans win the House, a majority in the House for the first time in 40 years. The last time the Republicans had held a majority in the House was in 1953, and then in 1954, the Democrats win a majority, and they held that majority until 1995 when the new Republican Congress comes in.
Yep.
I think that the Republican Congress had been, as history shows, had been making huge shifts and changes in the legislative power to accommodate what they wanted. And so you have those changes, and then to remove Bill Clinton, right? Because to be quite frank, Bill Clinton was doing a lot of things for the U.S. economy. The U.S. economy was booming. Gas prices were low. First time we have a surplus in decades. But they wanted to remove him to flex their power that they had been without for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stop there. I agree that I don't think Bill Clinton's impeachment bears too much on the impeachment of Donald Trump that's coming or may possibly be coming. But I do think that, again, this points to cultural shifts that are more related to what's happening, that they bear more on why the impeachment happens than what actually was the quote unquote crime.
Yeah.
So Donald Trump.
Donald
John Trump, 45th president of the United States. So
you have to say his full name,
Donald
John
Trump.
Jr.
No, he's not
Jr. Oh wait,
junior.
No. Oh, he has a son name.
Why don't you just go?
I'm so tired.
So Donald John Trump Sr., 45th president
senior
of the United States. There has been a lot of rumblings about hearings going on.
This week is on
the impeachment of Mr. Donald John Trump Sr.
All right.
Go ahead.
So let's talk about the timeline here. Okay, first and foremost, we have to recognize that the idea of impeaching Donald Trump has been around since before Donald Trump was elected president.
Yes.
Well, he was still the underdog. And after he won the Electoral College and such like that. Okay, you're thinking a whole bunch of stuff will bring him down. Mueller report. He gets through the Mueller report just fine. We've kind of forgotten about the Mueller report at this point.
Except Roger Stone is now...
Roger Stone, that just came out today.
Which
what,
I think
what is he doing?
He's going to jail now.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Yeah, the big thing throughout his presidency, obviously the Mueller report. April 21st of this year, something changes. Ukraine elects a comedian to be their president. So the Ukraine's president's name is Volodymyr Zelensky. And Zelensky, new president, up and coming, 41 years old. He's been a comedian and actor. I want to say he won around 71% of the vote. I remember hearing that news thinking it was kind of funny because, you know, we elected Donald Trump and he was more of an actor than businessman at that point, in my opinion. And then Ukraine elected an actor. So good for us. Okay, May 1st, Rudy Giuliani starts going out on different media outlets and proposing this theory of a relationship between Hunter Biden, who's Joe Biden's son, and a Ukraine gas and oil company, and how he was on the board of directors and how Joe Biden withheld U.S. aid to mitigate a prosecution that the gas oil company was going under.
In Ukraine.
Yeah, in Ukraine.
So Hunter Biden is on the board of this gas company, and dad is still, at this point, is still
vice president
of the United States. Hunter Biden puts pressure onto the president of Ukraine at the time and says, you may not want to do this or else aid may be withheld.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, and I think that's interesting because, you know, I follow a lot of different meme pages, both on the left and on the right, and you have this theory kind of floating around for literal years, like ever since it happened. Like this whole corruption within the White House with Joe Biden. So this theory is not new.
No.
Not by any means. Okay, eventually what happens, the U.S. freezes, well, the Trump White House freezes around $40 million in military aid to Ukraine. This happens before July 25th. July 25th is when we get the phone call between Trump and Zelensky. And this is where more of the allegations come in. And so this is really where everything starts. It's July 25th this year. Trump congratulates Zelensky on his election, on him being the president now. And then he brings up this theory by Giuliani and the firing of this prosecutor, this Ukrainian prosecutor. And he said that he would like an investigation. And so we only have a brief transcript of.
So we don't have the full transcript.
We don't have the full transcript. It's basically someone was typing along as they were talking. So you'll have sentences, but nothing about the transcript is full. But there's speculation about there being a quid pro quo, this for that kind of thing.
Essentially, we will provide you the aid that we have withheld as long as there are investigations against Joe Biden, his son. This oil company, so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or even just trading this investigation for a White House visit, a meeting with the president.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Then from there, things kind of explode. Diplomats start meeting with Zelensky more frequently. They meet with him a couple of times throughout July, according to my understanding. Rudy Giuliani in August meets with Ukrainian officials. Then August 12th is the big breaking away point. There, a whistleblower within the White House files a complaint alleging that this aid was frozen for this reason, and it was dangled over the Ukrainians' head. August 29th, Ukrainians raise concern about the aids. The aid. I hope they will raise concern about the aid.
But about the aid.
Yeah, but about the aid. Then September 11th, the White House lifts the freeze on the aid. So the Ukrainians get the aid that way. And then on September 24th of this year, Nancy Pelosi announces the formal impeachment inquiry into Trump based off of that phone call, the freezing of the aid, and the whistleblower complaint. So,
and we don't know who the whistleblower is.
We do not know who the whistleblower is, and that's one of the big debates right now.
Should the whistleblower be?
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to remember where it is in the Bill of Rights, but basically, when you're in a criminal proceeding, you have the right to know who your accuser is, and so people are kind of using that same mentality. It's like, well, this is a court proceeding. we should at least know who's accusing. But once again, impeachment inquiries, impeachment trials and such, they are not the same, and they're not subject to the same rules as a criminal proceeding.
Because it's not necessarily a trial.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a trial.
Just because it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, doesn't make it a duck. In this case.
Yes, that is true.
Just because you have a Senate who's essentially a jury, you have a judge presiding over the inquiry, the trial, you aren't allowed.
Yeah.
But so, at least according to the Democrats.
Yeah.
But right now we're just in the House portion of the process. So it's like maybe the argument could be made a little better if it were in the Senate, where it's actually supposed to act as a trial to like.
I would agree with that to a certain extent, except I think that the House, the grand jury, essentially that's how the House is acting, is as a grand jury of deciding whether or not there's enough evidence to try, correct?
Mm-hmm. But also, right now, we're just in an impeachment inquiry, which is different than an actual impeachment resolution or articles of impeachment.
Yeah.
Right.
So right now, it's really just kind of like an investigation.
So ultimately, there's an impeachment process is three steps. So first, the House investigates, which is where we're at right now.
Yeah.
The House is investigating. So we have the House Judiciary Committee and the House Intelligence Committee. Those are the two big
things. Who's the chair of Intelligence? Because Jerry Nadler's over Judiciary.
Judiciary. You have
Adam
Schiff.
Adam
Schiff. So those are our two big players.
Schiff to Schiff as our boy.
Yes.
As our President Donald Trump
Schiff
calls
Schiff.
Him.
Yes.
Schiff to Schiff.
So those are our two big main players right now. And second part is the House of Representatives passes a simple majority on articles of impeachment, which constitutes the formal allegations. So they'll say, in our case, they'll say, well, President Trump did A, B, and C, and they'll draft a different article of impeachment for each of them. Then the Senate tries the accused. That is our third and final step. So the Chief Justice, Justice Roberts, he'll preside over the proceedings. And and we'll go from there. And once again, that is 2/3 majority in the Senate. So 67 senators have to vote.
Do you have any more to your timeline?
No, that's it
okay.
for my timeline.
So here's what I want to ask. Going back to the whistleblower, if the House wants to adequately investigate, why is it that only Democrats are the ones who currently know who the whistleblower is and have talked to him? Or her, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're going to conduct an adequate investigation, I understand if you want to conceal it from the House, the rest of the House, the public, but
yeah.
I think at least the committee should be allowed to meet with and speak with the whistleblower.
Yeah, no.
But the Dems have pushed back about that, have they not?
Yeah, they've pushed back about it, and their justification, so in the 115th Congress, so the last Congress, Republicans kind of rewrote the rules on a couple of things. And they rewrote a couple of things with impeachment. And I brought up the idea of the Deschler's precedent, and that's basically what they based it off of. So the idea is, yes, things can be confidential, especially within the Intelligence Committee, to one, protect the whistleblower, some of these accusers.
But also protect the United States
and
its interests.
And to protect the United States and its interests. And here's the thing is, yeah, you can say, yeah, we can be confidential with these things, but there's nothing that I've read from the Deschler precedent that indicates that the majority party can hide things from the minority party. In fact, it makes it quite clear, and this is one thing where I do think the Democrats are wrong in this instance. Let me pull up a part. At the commencement of any presentation at which testimonies will be heard or papers, things considered, each committee member will be furnished with a list of papers and things that have been obtained by the committee or subpoenaed or otherwise. No member shall make the list or any part thereof public unless authorized by majority vote of the committee, a quorum being present. So basically, anything that the majority knows...
The minority has rights.
Yeah, the minority, according to the Deschler's...
standards.
Yeah.
Which still are adopted as the rules of the House.
Yeah, which are still adopted as the rules of the House. And this is the thing with the rules of the House, is you have to go through the parliamentarian, and it's a whole process. So it's the Republicans are kind of in a hard place right now, because they made the rules in 2015. They allow for confidential material to happen, but
But the minority of the committee has the right to know that what that confidential material is.
And they're not. I think the Republicans are proceeding in a way that isn't wise. They're not going to the original intent of the rules, which is based in the Dessler's precedent. They're going to, well, we just have a right to know. And it's like, well, do the American people have a right to know? No, because it's confidential material. And they're going off of right versus the original intent of what the Democrats are using to justify their decision.
So that's about the whistleblower. That's just a small part of this impeachment trial. Let's talk about the withholding of aid. You guys think, obviously the aid was frozen.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, what has the Trump camp offered as an explanation? Have they offered anything?
Well, I've kind of heard things. I don't know if this is like an official explanation from the White House, but just that like from time to time that aid is often withheld when like kind of negotiating things or like determining whether or not that's the thing to do, I guess. So I think they're just claiming that like
it was a routine negotiation. There's nothing about me wanting to go after my political opponents. It was just.
So the official reasoning I believe the White House has given has been, well, there was corruption in Ukraine. We want it fully investigated, especially as it pertains to U.S. citizens. This is something that the Trump administration has actually been doing a lot more, from my understanding. So more recently, throughout the administration, Trump has withheld military aid from Cameroon for their human rights violations.
Okay.
And that's just kind of the thing, because Trump is more of an isolationist.
Yes.
So you could take this route and say, well, this is common practice for the White House.
In this administration.
Yeah, in this administration. The official ruling in law is when aid is frozen. Before the aid is frozen, the House, being the appropriators of those funds, have to have a 45 day notice.
Were they notified?
No, they were not.
Okay.
So that's the thing. It's like, well...
And is that in statute or is that a ruling from the court? Or
I believe that's statute, but I don't know 110%. I'm pretty sure it's statute.
Okay.
But yeah, it's 45 days. And so, I don't know, if I were the Republicans, I would ask, well, were we aware about Cameroon? Were we aware about other times where aid was frozen or withheld?
Because if not, why are you bringing it up now?
Yeah.
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 Well, but I think this brings up an interesting question, which kind of relates to the War Powers Act. The War Powers Act essentially says that the president may send troops wherever in the world that he may want to, but he has to notify Congress. And there's a whole thing about notifying Congress. And presidents have never said that the War Powers Act is law. They've never said that they have to follow it. Because the Constitution clearly states that the president has the right and is the executive commander, the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. So here's a question, though. Is the executive, since he is the one who spends the money, does he really have to allow Congress to know? So even if the president has in the past, this brings up a constitutional question about, okay, well, the president is the executive power. He has the right to spend the money. Congress appropriates it and says, you can either spend $40 million, you are given $40 million to spend. The president can either then do that or not. That brings up an interesting constitutional question.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other question it brings up too, and I think in terms of anti-impeachment, the strongest argument is, well, did Ukraine eventually get the aid? Which the answer is, yes, they did. September 11th, that's when they got the aid.
Well, it's before the impeachment.
Yeah. Yeah, it's before a lot of things. Then the other question that the Republicans really have in the corner, in my opinion, is, well, did this Ukrainian investigation against the Bidens ever actually take place?
Right.
The answer to that, as far as we know, as far as public knowledge goes, is that investigation has not taken place. So Trump did not get what he wanted if he wanted this quid pro quo. So
okay. So that's the investigation. That's the withholding of the aid. What about the transcript? You said that it's not complete. What do you think that tells us? Do you think honestly? I think that's one of the most damning parts of the evidence is that you don't even have a transcript of what's said.
How can you make any kind of allegation unless it's people who are there? And from what I've understood, most of the witnesses who have gone up and testified already have said they weren't even at the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the lead star witnesses of the Democrats.
Yeah, well, and you'll even have this if you read through the whistleblower complaint. Basically, you'll have, you know, I heard this from several people that this was going on. So the whistleblower that themselves, they weren't at the phone call. And so, yeah, that's kind of like the hard thing. It's like,
And going back to a criminal proceeding or a trial, what's it called? Not heresy. It's hearsay. Hearsay is not admissible.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
this kind of points again to that, well, the impeachment isn't a court proceeding per se, but we expect it to have some of the standards that a court proceeding would. If we're going to remove our president, that should require some amount of courtroom procedure.
Mm-hmm.
But again and again, we don't have any actual, I was there, I heard President Donald John Trump Sr. say, we will withhold $40 million in aid unless you
do
X, Y, and Z. So,
well, I think it is important to like go back to something Dylan said. Like, now I am not a fan of President Trump, but like, I think it is kind of apparent that like Democrats are kind of have not wanted him to be president since like his election.
Since before the election,
he was president-elect. Like, and you know, we could have probably a whole different podcast episode about that. But I think because of that, with just like every little thing that's happened, and like certainly, I think they've given Trump is giving them every reason for him not to be president. Not necessarily to impeach him, but like to defeat him in 2020. I mean, he's different than any other president that we've had in our lifetimes, you know. But I think because of how strongly the Democrats react to almost everything that he does, I think Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, was kind of in a position in order to control her own party or to maintain power in her own party to allow them to kind of have this investigation. Because you, like on Twitter, I've seen multiple times people associated with the National Republican Party, especially like who's the chairwoman's name?
She's Romney's,
Romney's
niece.
Niece.
Yeah, that's how I remember, if I'm being completely honest.
I just want to pause here and apologize that a group of three men referred to a powerful woman in politics as Romney's niece.
Well, I just can't remember her name. That's what everyone kind of knows her as.
But yes, we are sorry that we don't know.
We respect her.
There's plenty of people I don't know who are men, and I don't know their name, and I associate them through other people.
But she's the chairwoman of the Republican National Convention.
Right.
The chairperson. And she retweeted something from Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah.
That's his name?
Yeah.
And he was like, these were Nancy Pelosi's, like, conditions in going through with impeachment. And one was, like, bipartisanship. Another was, like, being kind of overwhelming or compelling in evidence. And I think Nancy Pelosi understands, like, at least to some extent, that going forward you need a little bit more or this might cause other problems outside of just the impeachment. And I think just in order to, like, maintain some kind of I don't even know the word I'm looking for. But understanding that a lot of people in our party wanted to go through with this based on the things that had been shared within the whistleblower complaint that she kind of left in a position where she...
Well, I think you bring up an interesting question, and this is actually a question that our founders grappled with a little bit, is like, does the House need to be impartial and bipartisan in an impeachment inquiry?
Well, I don't think it ever has been.
In the three we've talked about,
it hasn't been.
And here's the thing. So the two Federalist Papers I could find regarding impeachment,
mm-hmm.
Both written by Alexander Hamilton,
yeah.
Federalist 65 and 66,
yep.
Both have to do with basically the Senate. And basically what he says is, yeah, you have these accusers, and they can basically accuse the president of whatever. And the check and balance there is supposed to be the Senate, who are supposed to be preserved, unawed, and uninfluenced from the necessary impartiality between the individual accused and the representatives of the people, his accusers.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I really do believe that, you know, regardless, the House by itself is a partisan machine. It's a simple majority machine.
Yeah.
And, you know, in terms of this impeachment having to be bipartisan in the House, I don't actually think that's a compelling argument. I think once we get to the Senate, yeah, it will have to be bipartisan, especially since the Republicans control the Senate and the Democrats will have to sway over 20 Republicans. And
yeah.
Do they need 20? How many Dems are there?
There's 48.
Okay, yeah, about 20.
Yeah. Well, and here's the interesting thing. They'll need all of the Democrats to vote with them. And one, I don't think Kristen Sinema.
I don't think she has less incentive to. And then what's his name?
Joe Manchin. Yeah, like.
Well, and even maybe John Tester.
Yeah, like
from Montana. Okay, that's kind of getting into the last little bit we should probably go into about predictions about what happens. So I think we need to talk about, okay, what do you think happens with the inquiries? Do they lead anywhere? Does the House formally impeach? Does the Senate do so? And with the timeline here, that's looking like it may happen, if any of this does come to fruition, July, August, maybe September next year, when we're right in the middle of a presidential election where Donald Trump is almost guaranteed to be the Republican nominee.
Mm-hmm.
So predictions. First off, do you think the trials go anywhere? Do you think that that any evidence comes forward that absolutely shows, maybe not absolutely, but there's strong, strong evidence that Donald Trump abused power? My prediction here is that unless Nancy Pelosi is presented with some kind of absolute evidence, such as a transcript, such as somebody who was in the room, and honestly, that may not even be enough with just one person, you need two or three people, Nancy Pelosi won't allow a trial to go through. Because here's what happens. She allows it to go through without that firm evidence. If the House even approves impeachment, which it may not, honestly, because without strong evidence, there may be some Democrats who have to go home to election in the next year, or it, you know, by this time it could be March or April, if they have to go home to swing districts and they aren't able to show, say, I did what I thought was best. That looks bad for her. That looks bad for her party. Even if she files these articles, they go to the Senate. If it's not enough, Mitch McConnell, Cocaine Mitch, is not going to allow his party to fall apart and vote the Republican president out of office. That's going to fall apart. Donald Trump gets kicked out of office. Even if all those dominoes line up, it still just doesn't look like it's going to work. That's so many insurmountable odds. And if any piece of the puzzle falls apart, it almost guarantees Donald Trump's election come 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they fail to, first of all, if they fail to even pass articles, let's say that Nancy Pelosi says we can vote on articles, those fail to pass. That just shows the American public that Democrats can't even get rid of their worst enemy. Let's say they do pass.
And it shows that just like exactly what he says.
Yeah.
It's just this witch hunt. That,
it's
like,
just
they
a witch
just
hunt.
Tried, they don't, just because they don't
well,
like
they
me.
Tried
it's like,
Mueller,
they tried with
Mueller.
They tried with Mueller. They tried with impeachment.
They tried it this time. They tried. It doesn't amount to anything.
Yeah.
We are just going to keep winning. Keep America great.
MAGA.
I think the first day of the impeachment inquiries, the Trump campaign raised over $3 million for 2020. And that campaign is just a money train,
let
me tell you.
Well, and that's why I agree a lot with what Clint is saying. Like, I think Nancy Pelosi understands that this will not just affect what's happening in the House, but has ramifications in the 2020 election that can help her.
That,
well, and
yeah,
it, you know, going beyond
especially
that,
when they want
if,
to assume the White
if
House.
2020, come 2020, if she's bungled, if the House Democrats have bungled enough, does that switch the House back? So I think my prediction then is that Donald Trump will not be impeached by this. Unless there is insurmountable evidence, such as transcripts, such as whatever it may be, unless there is undeniable evidence, it doesn't even get out of the House, and if it does, even in the Senate, it's going to be really hard to surmount. Dylan, what are your thoughts?
So I think we're going to see three or four different impeachment articles drafted. I think the whole thing with the Ukraine phone call, I don't think that's going to pass. However, something that we didn't really talk about that's kind of risen this week with everything is the removal of Marie Yanovich,
she was the ambassador to
Ukraine until May of this year. I think there will be an impeachment article drafted for that, for the improper removal. And I think the other articles...
The Tenure in Office Act.
Yes.
People, you know,
the
yeah,
Tenure
right.
in Office Act. No,
Andrew Johnson
will
be rolling in his grave.
No, but I actually do think that President Trump will join the small list of presidents who have...
Been impeached.
Been impeached. Be the third on that list, because Nixon never made it, so...
Yeah. We'll call him a half, so Trump will be three and a half.
Three and a half. No, but I do think it's going to get to the Senate and die.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's going to be... That's the thing. They're going to get there, and you're going to have a lot of Democrats that say it's like, well, this isn't a Ukraine phone call. Like, this isn't a Mueller... What kind of the anticipation that, you know, a lot of Democrats had with the Mueller report, a lot of Democrats had with this Ukraine phone call. Because it's all this mosh-posh of Trump's a bad person and we don't want him to be president, but it's like, is that impeachable? No. But, I mean, and not to sound too much like Fox News is... I agree with this idea that I think this will help the Trump campaign in 2020 because it honestly, to me, this is just my perception. Yes, there's a necessity for Congress to protect our establishments and to ensure that power is kept in check, but it's just been going on for so long that it's like the little boy who cried wolf.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Like, because I heard about the impeachment with the Ukraine call, and I was just like,
okay, well,
let's see how this goes. And once again, I'm a conservative.
I think a lot of Americans feel that way too.
Yeah.
Just like, well, here's another thing. Like,
yeah.
Here it is again.
Another partisan show of
we hate Donald Trump. Carter, what are your predictions?
I think I agree with you. I didn't consider the Ukraine ambassador thing, but I don't know. I think Nancy Pelosi wants to kind of maintain control of this and doesn't really want it to get out of control. So I think unless they just really have anything that they think they can convince the Senate to remove him from office with, that I just don't know if they'll go through with an impeachment article.
Yeah, if they get an actual transcript or they get a witness that was in the room,
that's different. It changes things.
It's a lot different.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're coming at just about an hour here, so this has been a really good discussion. I really enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed how we went over the history of it. I really thought that kind of prepared us for what we talked about with Donald Trump. We need to decide a topic for next week. What do you guys think?
Do we want to just do the random?
We can. Let me pull up. What'd you have?
I was gonna say we've talked about two kind of heavy things.
War and politics.
War and politics. So maybe we should try to
do something lighter
a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Let me just pull up our list here. Do you guys have any more thoughts about impeachment while I'm pulling this up? Or one thing I want to talk about real quick is just the idea that, like, again, this is a lot of cultural driving the issues here. It doesn't really matter what Donald Trump has done. Not to say that he hasn't maybe possibly done some things that he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
But it's the idea that the Democrats want – there's a cultural shift here and a cultural push rather than what the president has done. You know, Andrew Johnson was pushed out because the radicals wanted to take power. Richard Nixon is pursued after because of changes in media and media relations with government. And Bill Clinton's pushed out because of Republicans' new power in the House. And I think this is, again, a reflection of that. The Democrats have been out of power for a while. They want to flex their muscles. They want to show – because Donald Trump is a cultural changer, and I think that's just all part of this. Not to say that there aren't some real issues here with Donald Trump and his presidency, but I think, again – the more fundamental power issues, cultural issues, are what's driving the impeachment, not necessarily what Donald Trump's done.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I would just like to say it's like I think the impeachment, kind of that mechanism there, I think it's important that we don't undersell its importance. And, you know, being a Republican, being a conservative guy, I've seen a lot like, oh, well, there's nothing here, like, we should just throw out the impeachment inquiries, and I don't think that's necessarily correct, because, you know, we do need to keep executive officers accountable, and this is one mechanism. I don't agree with the Democrats' rhetoric right now. I don't agree with how their playbook has been going, but, you know, I would just kind of say looking at these issues and looking at this issue in particular, it is an important thing, and we shouldn't just pass it by. So,
yeah.
Okay.
One thing I want to say, too, is, I was not old enough to remember how Bill Clinton's impeachment process went about, but I do think that, like, a lot of what we've seen this time around from both Democrats and Republicans, and I consider myself conservative Republican, is just kind of like this partisan bickering back and forth, and I think we need to be careful not to undermine, like, the integrity of an election just for partisan reasons. And, like, I have no reason to believe that Donald Trump wasn't duly elected, and we shouldn't just throw him out of office because we don't like him. You know, whatever.
For sure. All right, so we've got a topic. We just for our listeners, we have a list here of just random topics, like all sorts of different things. Random number generated a few times. Picked one that we all kind of liked. It's here. It's called Fleetwood Mac. The classic 70s rock and roll band. We will be
Dylan
standing and applauding. He and I love Fleetwood Mac. Carter, do you?
I'll be honest with you, I've never listened to Fleetwood Mac.
Okay, go listen to. Okay, this will be good to go.
I have a week to listen to it.
So. Go listen to Rumors, the album Rumors. Yeah, we'll talk about them next week. We really enjoyed having you all here. Thanks for listening to the second episode of the Backup CD. Have a good one.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.